Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and every week I'm honored to share the microphone with really interesting people. These are people who may be entrepreneurs or authors or speakers, and many times both or all three. They may be virtual assistants, web developers, small business owners, but they are people who have wonderful stories to share, and they are also excited to freely share their business wisdom tips and their actionable advice. Excuse me, I'm raspy today. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And today I am chatting with the Doctor of Business Planning, David Brown. Now, this is David's second appearance on the podcast, so be sure to check out the link in the show notes for the first interview, Starting a Business from the Bottom Up. It was a great interview. David is an international best-selling author with his latest book, Journeys to Success, 21 Empowering Stories Inspired by the Success Principles of Napoleon Hill. And the foreword was written by one of my most recent guests, actually. He was here with me last week, Ben Gay III. It's an excellent read. I suggest that you grab it. So during his 25-year career in insurance, Dave learned firsthand the challenges of running a small business, including one of the top reasons businesses fail, which is failure to plan. So good morning, David, and welcome back to Your Partner in Success Radio.
Good morning, Denise, and thanks for having me back. I greatly appreciate it and really enjoy being part of your program.
Oh, thank you. The interview that we had the last time, it was a high-rated interview. You gave us a lot of information, and I really hope people will find the time, especially this long weekend, to kind of tap into some of these podcasts and listen to the business wisdom that all of you guys share. I mean, it's just amazing what you guys come up with. So tell me what's new with you, David.
Well,
the new book has been
fantastic. To be part of a program like that has really been incredible for me. But it's allowed me to be recognized more of a business expert with being part of this program. And it's really helped me move my business to the next level and hopefully continue to grow. But I just enjoy sharing different things with people and how to help them get their business, because we all need someone to help us in the right direction. And so that's where I've been focusing a lot of my time, and it's been paying off wonderfully.
A lot of our friends, our mutual friends, are in that book as well. It's an amazing book. And I think Brad Zolas, didn't he create the cover for that?
He did. When all this transpired, when Tom Tutal Cunningham contacted me about being part of this, there was no hesitation. I'm in. And then as we recruited other writers to come into this and people, and just the amazing stories that all of these people have went through, it really opens up the eyes and the mind. No matter how bad we have it, there's always somebody out there that's went through worse and is going through worse. But the lessons learned on how they overcome so many different challenges in their life to be successful is just, I've read it, I think, two or three times already since it's been released. That's just how much I've enjoyed it. So if you haven't had a chance to read it, I strongly encourage people to pick this up. It's Kindle and paperback. So, and this is just volume one of a series of books that Tom Cunningham is putting together. Brad will have one coming out later this year, and Tom has another volume coming out. So it's really transforming all this based on Napoleon Hill.
And, you know, Napoleon Hill is one of those people that I stumbled across a long time ago. I'm not even sure how I did it. I think it was about the same time I discovered my all-time hero, Zig Ziglar. And I was telling Ben Gay the third last week that my car stops for garage sales. It just happens. I have no control. And I stopped at this garage sale a long time ago. And there was this box of yellowed cassette tapes. And I saw this name, Zig Ziglar. And I thought, what in the heck is a Zig Ziglar? So I bought these tapes. I think it was 50 cents for the whole box. And then I had to, you know, find a cassette player that actually worked. And I still have one, by the way. And I fell in love with Zig Ziglar. And from there, I think I discovered Wallace Wattles and Napoleon Hill all about the same time. It's one of those serendipity things. Yet I just all of a sudden, they all just kind of strolled into my life. So I paid attention, and I still do.
Yeah. Napoleon Hill, my first encounter with his work was when I began working in my insurance career, when the gentleman that hired me during the pre-contract period, he handed me, that was one of the books he handed me. He says, read this, study it, learn it, and do it. And that was my first exposure when the book was Think and Grow Rich.
It's an amazing book. I mean, it really is. There's nothing in there that doesn't make perfect sense to me.
Mine's all yellow, and not only from time, but
yeah.
From the highlight.
Oh, listen, I have it in every version you can think of. I have a PDF, I have the ebook, I have the old paperbacks, again, garage sale. I mean, I'm almost afraid to open the paperback. They're so browned on the edges and the pages are brown.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not giving it up. That book is not going anywhere. So, but I like
to
grab the PDF and print it out and then highlight the heck out of it.
Yeah, I have the PDF of the original manuscript.
Oh, wow.
Which is, you know, and I've got a book that someone else published of it. But, I've got several different versions myself. And
mm-hmm.
To me, it's that should be required reading for people in high school.
You know, you would think so. And Wallace Wattles, too, even though his language is very dated, and I think some of the more updated versions would be easier for people to read. But he had some very important things to say as well.
Mm-hmm. And then Zig, I mean, those
oh,
are
yeah.
some of the top people in this industry. And then, like you with your interview last week with Ben Gay III, tremendous
mm-hmm.
gentleman. I had an opportunity to meet him a couple years ago. And I sat next to him for a 2 or 3 day summit and really didn't even know who he was until it was his turn at the podium. And here I've been picking his brain for 2 days. I said, this is wonderful. And what I could, you know, we did a mastermind at our little table in the summit. And what I learned from him and the other people, my head was just swimming by the end of, you know, that program. But it's very interesting what all of these gentlemen and so many more can teach us if we only open up our eyes and our mind to pay attention.
Exactly. And I think that's the beauty of having these podcasts and other means. I mean, you guys all go on other programs and I mean, you're really getting your voices heard. And I think that's amazing. I have to tell you, though, I was out running the roads yesterday. You know, my dog went to her groomer. I went to mine. You know, I was running my errands. And I went to the post office and I picked up a package from Ben Gay III. And there's 3 books in there. Look, I didn't even wait to get into the parking lot. I was ripping that package open, and he wrote the sweetest things in the book. So I'm going to take pictures and put them on Facebook today. But look, I actually, because of all the troubles that I was having last week with, you know, bad internet and my air conditioning going, I actually have just canceled Memorial Day weekend. I'm not having any kind of activities here. I'm not going anywhere, and I'm going to get caught up on things. And one of the things I'm going to get caught up with is reading. And those 3 books are in a stack near my couch. And guess what I'm reading this weekend? I mean, without fail.
I wish
and
I had
supposed to rain,
his two
so
books.
That's all good.
Yeah, The Closers 1 and 2. That would have been the books I was given 25 years ago.
All right, I have both of them.
Yeah, I have, and I've got them, and they're highlighted.
Oh.
But again, you know, those are some of the gems that we have and the stories.
Yeah.
Having, like, you know, with Ben working side by side and being tutored by
Zig Ziglar and
Napoleon Hill and some of these gentlemen, I'm saying, oh, this
Earl
is phenomenal.
Nightingale. He told some great stories about Earl Gady. Nightingale last week said he was the voice of God. I cracked up, but it's true. The guy had a magnificent voice.
I was laughing right along with you because I had an opportunity to listen to that podcast, and I had a page full of notes by the time we're done. I'm glad I wasn't driving.
Oh, me too. I mean, I kept moving my cat off of my composition notepad and say, "Move! I've got to write stuff down," because it was just so great. I mean, it really was. So, all that to say, I really appreciate each and every one of you, all of my guests, past, present, future. I know you guys give me an hour or more of your time on these Fridays, and I'm so appreciative of it because it enriches my life. I'm convinced it enriches the people's lives who hear it. And I'm just really grateful that you guys are willing to share your, you know, your tips, your tricks, your wisdom, and the stories, you know, how you got where you are and where you're going.
Well, that is key. I mean, it's an honor to be part of a program like yours and so many others. That people want to hear what I have to say, you know, from all my lessons learned in my insurance business and then past and plus outside of that. But it's just a tremendous honor to be, you know, a part of a show that, and people that want to listen to what we have to say. It's just, I just can't get over it. I'm still, my head sometimes swims, and I'm still with the book going out as an international bestseller. Some days my wife has to pull me off the ceiling because my head is full of helium floating up there.
Right, but that's a good thing. I mean, you know, you do your best every day, right? I mean, you really want to do the best that you can do. And, you know, have maybe the next day be at least 1% better than the day before. You're always striving for excellence. So when you finally hit that stride and everything, the culmination of your life, your wisdom, your business, and it all kind of starts pulling together and you're able to share that with other people, I think that's a tremendous thing.
Yeah, you know, and you know, I'm looking at myself. If what I've learned, to me, if I kept it inside and didn't share it, I would be doing not only myself a disservice, but people that could learn from it. And it's wonderful to just be able to share just tidbits here and there, if that's all they want, or a lot of help. And I've had mentors through all my career, and I'm just paying it forward and just hopefully that the next person that we help will do the same thing for the people that come to them.
Oh, exactly.
And we'll all be successful with that if that works through the system.
It does. It's pretty amazing how it all kind of trickles out, and you never really know how it's trickling out there, but then somebody will say something to you one day or you'll get an email and they go, "Wow, I said that? Oh, well, I'm glad that resonated with you." So, you know, people are listening, they are paying attention, and they are enriching themselves, you know, their lives, their thoughts. You know, they're working on it. I promise you they are.
And just hearing the feedback, I was talking with a young lady that wanted some help with her business plan. It scared her to death to start her business plan. And she says, "Well, how do I do this?" And I sat down, sent her the workbook. She, you know, got a hold of my book from the bottom up. And then the next thing to do is I get a call saying, "Oh, my God, I'm so excited." She says, "I've been dreading this all my life. And here, you made it so easy. And it's fill in the blank on your workbook online." And I'm saying, oh, I did that? But it is, you know, it just
yeah, because it's
easy
for you. Right. We all have this. It's so easy to do. We just assume that people know what we know and they just don't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just a given. So, but I had the same experience. I had never, well, I can't say I've never. It had been a very long time since I wrote a business plan. And I'll be honest with you, I started Your Office on the Web, which is my web development company, and then the arm of that, Your Virtual Assistant, without a business plan. I just went online and started doing it. And then all of a sudden, I grew too fast, and I was exhausted. And, I mean, I was worn out, and I knew I had to ratchet it back and create a business plan. And I'm telling you, your plan helps. It really did. And I'm like her. I was scared to death. It's like, oh. I had all the little quarrels with myself, David. Oh, it's too late. I'm already in business. I've been in business a long time. Why do I want to do that? And I just said, oh, just shut up and do it. And I went and did it. And all of a sudden, things became very clear to me where I should be, where I shouldn't be. You know, it was really easy. It was an easy process.
Well, and if you break it down into the small pieces, you know, when we think of a plan, we look at this whole big process that we need to go through, and it's overwhelming. We all, and no matter what the project is that we have to do, if we look at the whole thing, you know, where do we start? You know, how do we do this? Where do we find this? And that's where people get, you know, they just quit. And they never sometimes feel that passion that they have to help people in a business or whatever the case may be. But when you break it down piece by piece, and that was one of the things, you know, I like to recommend is if you take one piece, take a piece of paper, write out the first section. Then when you're done, even if it's two sentences, put that piece of paper off to the side. That's done. Then we go back and do the next piece. And you're only concentrating on one little piece of the puzzle, but yet when you're done, you have the whole big picture. And sometimes we forget to do that no matter what the project is. We see this vision of grandeur out there in front of us. Oh, how am I going to do that? And unfortunately, you know, I got scared like that a couple times writing mine, and I'm saying, all right, sit back, regroup, you know, piece at a time, piece at a time. Because we want to get it done, but yet we don't want to tackle it.
But isn't that true for most big projects or what are perceived as big projects? I mean, I don't know about you. I am constantly falling prey to paralysis by analysis. I overanalyze. I'm logical. I'm linear. And I can shut myself down every now and then. It's not a good thing. So I like the idea of chunking it out in small pieces. That makes perfect sense.
You know, and I'm like you. You know, we sit there and we analyze that, and then we'll do this again. Let's try it this way. We try it this way, and we never get to it. And then you know, I kind of go back to one of Seth Godin's books when he talked about you know, getting as good as good enough, ship it, and then that way you know, yeah, it can always be a little better, but get it out there so people can use it. And then
of course,
the
perfectionists among us are going, "Oh God, no!" But
yeah. He's
right; it will never be perfect. So, perfect in your eyes. So, get it out there. You can always edit, redo, but get it out there if it's good enough. You're right, and I'm guilty of that too. It's like, oh, it has to be just right. I've struggled with that for a long time, but I'm getting much, much better about it.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of us entrepreneurs are that way. We want everything perfect because this is our baby. We've birthed it. We've grown it. And we don't want to put anything out there that's not 100% accurate or even punctuation.
Right.
And so we keep delaying it and delaying it and delaying it, and it sits in our computer. And so we just got to keep it going, do that, and then, all right. So we got a couple mistakes. Most people will overlook them, but every now and then you'll get an email back, well, you missed a period or this should have been this. On page such and such, right? We got one complaint out of how many, but it's just that we got to get it done. Otherwise, we're going to go broke, trying to back to paralysis if we don't do these things and move them out there. And
you're right.
It's just been,
but I'm a grammar Nazi, no question about that. And that's another thing. I'm like, bad Denise, you don't be so judgmental. But I love to read. I think I've shared this with you. I'm a voracious reader, and it's not unknown for me to read a book a day and multiple books during the weekend. I'm a speed reader. I can grasp things very quickly. And I had downloaded this one book. It's a children's book, but it looked interesting. And I'm telling you, if I had let my grammar, not really a children, you know, mid-grade, upper-grade, young adult, but it just had all the elements I like and, you know, kind of a little mystery that you have to kind of puzzle through. And if I had let myself be distracted by the misspelled words or the occasional, you know, wrong sentence structure, I would have missed out on what turned out to be a really great book. I mean, I read the whole thing in one sitting. But I had to calm myself, like, Denise, don't get mad about this. You know, just calm down. And finally, my eye would allow me to skip over and just go, and then just keep on going.
Yeah, focus
but
on the content.
Exactly. And the content was superb. It really was. So I hope this author writes another follow-up with this book.
Well, you know, I like to work out of coffee shops just to be around people. because you know the old saying, the entrepreneur is the loneliest place is the loneliest person out there.
Yeah.
I never
much.
Understood that until within the last year, because I spend so much time in my office at home and there's nobody here during the day.
Right. We can
so
become
I have to
very
get around
isolated.
People.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I will visit a coffee shop or two throughout the week and take my stuff and do my work there. But people will, you'll see somebody and it'll trigger a thought is one reason. But it's just, I just like being around people, always have been. But sitting over there at Panera Bread not long ago, ran into my old English teacher from high school. And we were laughing. He asked what I was doing. I was telling him about the journeys to success. I says, you know, here, I says, you know, hit this book. I says, and you didn't even think I'd make it out of your English class, you know. And he started laughing, but it was just one of those things. That, he said, hey, you know, if you need any help, you know, with proofreading it, I said, keep you in mind. It was just one of those funny things that just struck us that day. But seeing one of his old students now be an author was a fulfillment for him. But it's just sitting down and doing it.
Yeah, I think you have to just do it. I think that's the big thing. Just do it. It sounds simple, but it's not always the easiest thing to do.
Exactly. And, you know, no matter what we're doing in life, you know, we run into that same. And so many things that we do in business applies to our everyday life that a lot of people don't recognize that. They think it's combined to the business model where it's not. So many things that I've done, I've applied to my life. You know, going back to Napoleon Hill, when I'm looking at those success principles, and I sit on a volunteer board of directors, which I'm the president of, and I'm sitting back thinking about this board, and they're following, you know, why they're successful is they're following every one of those 17 success principles in our daily operation. And when this program was started 50 years ago, I know that wasn't even a thought. But it was just how ironic that all of a sudden it hit me like a ton of bricks saying, okay, we've got the board is a mastermind group. We're all focused and on and on and on. And, but then you look back and those same principles apply every day in our life. When you get up with, all right, I have a purpose today. This is what it's going to be. And I'm going to do it with enthusiasm to carry forward. And that's how I've been able to get so much of my stuff done is because having that direct focus to, you know, sit down and write a chapter in a book or put together a presentation to a large group, whatever the case is, it just focus on that and kind of shut off the outside, and I can get amazing work done.
Oh, listen, I agree with you. I do the same thing. I call it kind of segment intending, if you will, but I focus on one thing. You know, I can multitask. We all can, but I found that if I was making mistakes, that I was getting jittery, you know, because I would think, oh, at the back of my mind, I didn't do something right. You know, there was always something bugging me, like, ooh, did I forget a piece? So I have learned, I've taught myself, it's actually a skill that I've had to teach myself, to just focus on one thing at a time, which, you know, for women, that's tough. For most people, it's tough. For women in particular, we're taught to multitask, you know, pick up the kids, you know, make lunches, do this, go to work. Yeah, it's just, that's just how we operate. And I'm telling you, David, it took some true focus for me to go one thing at a time. But, man, I can churn out some work because I will segment and tend. I will sit down with my composition notebook, what my cat sleeps on, and on one side of the page I write three things that I'm going to do that day, three critical things. And then I pick number one, number two, number three, and then I focus what I choose my time, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it's going to be. And I focus only on that. No phone, no email, no nothing. And I almost never overrun that time slot. You know, I tell myself, okay, it's 60 minutes. And at 60 minutes, I'll look at my system tray, look at the clock, and I'll be darned. I'm maybe a little under, a little bit over, but I can now take a break, come back, and then refocus. It's amazing.
It really is. You know, and I've had to train myself to
it's
do that because,
huh?
Well, being in the insurance, I was doing at any given time probably a dozen things, and I know things didn't get full attention, and so I'm like I've learned to focus on the task at hand, And then the other thing that I've learned, and I always thought, said I never could do this, is you hear people say, well, I only answer my email and voicemail a couple times a day. Oh, I could never do that. I find myself leaning more and more that direction to avoid those distractions during that segmented time when I'm focusing on this project, because I know I can get it done if I just give it my attention. And I think, was it Brian Tracy said, eat the frog, where you do the most difficult task first thing in the morning.
Exactly.
And I plan my day. What I need to get done first thing this morning, right? What's the worst thing that's got to be done? Because everything there is going to be a little easier as I go along. And that's how I start my day, is figuring out, right, this is what I got to get done today. And, right, of those, this has to be done. And it makes it so much easier at any given time. Right now, I've got 3 legal pads full of stuff right in front of me for different projects that I keep notes on. As something pops in my head, I write it down. But, you know, and it's just having that focus, right? Make a note, then go back.
Exactly.
And it just makes its life easier and less stressful.
It really does. And what I have found, David, this is a trick that I don't know if it's a trick. It works for me. Is I will sit down and I will look at what I'm going to do. And on the left side, I will, you know, take, okay, number one, number two, number three. I will then pull that whatever number one was over to the left side. I may jot down a couple of things underneath it, like A, B, C, D. You know, these are the things that have to happen during this project or this focus time. And then I just kind of sit and contemplate it. And I kind of clear my brain. I really do. I can't meditate. I fall over and drool, but, you know, I just kind of clear my brain. I do a little bit of deep breathing, and then I'm focused. It's amazing what you can do if you intentionally focus.
And I think so many people don't give it that attention. And, you know, distractions are so easy in front of us at any given time. Somebody walks in the door or whatever. For all my business career, I've kind of had to have my special time when I can get work done. When I was in the insurance and I had my office, I would get in there at least an hour to an hour and a half before my staff did. I got half a day's work done in that time frame.
Oh, yeah.
Because I wouldn't answer the phone, the door's locked, and I could focus on what I needed to do. If I had certain calls to make, I know I can make them before 9. They're done. And so when the chaos starts, when 9 o'clock, I've got all the priority stuff done. It's because I've set that, like you have. You set your time aside, and that's what I tell people with this. You know, focus on your plans, and then you can get it done. But it's just one of those things, you know, to focus, break it down, and just keep a little bit at a time, and then it just makes life easier to go by. And we all need less stress, and that's one way I've found that eases that stress burden.
Well, I was going to ask you, what do you tell people who say they don't have enough time? Well, we just covered that beautifully, so thank you.
Get up a little earlier is the biggest thing. You know,
oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, when you get up like at 5:30 in the morning, I refuse to get up any earlier. But at 5, my wife and I have our set time every morning. That's our time together, because once we start moving, that's it. All bets are off.
Right.
And so we've got set aside time for that, but I've got time that I do all this. And you say it's, if people focus on what they spend their time on, they will find the time.
I agree. And it's taken me, once I started this practice in my life, because people always ask me, how do you get so much done? And I had to stop and think about it, because it became such a habit for me to just focus. Yeah, but I had to train myself, but once I learned it, it became second nature. And I forgot that I'd had to train myself until I have conversations like this with, you know, with other people. It's amazing what we know and what we don't think to share, isn't it?
Absolutely. The other piece that I've learned years ago is, in our area, we've got a lot of railroad tracks. And there's some days you wait for 2 or 3 trains before you can even cross one set of tracks.
Yeah, we have.
And so I always kept a file full of articles in my car, or a book. You know, this is a railroad reading. You tell people, how often are you waiting for a train? I can read an article out of a magazine. I tear the articles out and throw the magazine away. Right? That way you're not having all this stack, and I have a file for them all. But that's how I get caught up on some of my reading, is I'm always waiting for a train. I can sit here and read an article or on an airplane or whatever the case may be. But so you got 5 minutes. That's enough time to at least skim through and get the high points of an article.
Do you listen to the radio in your car?
Yes.
Or music?
But I also do a lot of CDs of speakers.
Right.
I just got made a trip, and I listened to two CDs. I made it through a program that I've gotten of a motivational speaker and use it as a mobile classroom.
Mm-hmm. I do that, but if I've learned not to listen to the radio. It's too distracting. It's too annoying. And unless I'm on a long trip, in fact, that's where I was introduced to Wayne Dyer. Dr. Wayne Dyer was on a 10-hour car drive with my best friend. We were going to Atlanta, Georgia. And she said, do you want to listen to some of these? I said, sure. And we listened to that the whole way there and the whole way back. I was fascinated. But unless, you know, if I'm just running around town, I've taught myself not to distract myself in the car. That's my thinking time. So I can come up with the darndest ideas because now I'm focused on just kind of letting my brain freewheel, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep a little notepad in the passenger seat, and I'll reach over when I'm, you know, at a stop, obviously, and I'll jot down a thought. And then I can come home and just create something out of nothing because I had this random thought, and I wasn't distracted by a disc jockey or, you know, the lyrics of a song. So on little short-term rides around town, I don't have anything going on in the car but my brain, and I like it.
Yeah, it's I'm going to date myself. I used to carry a portable cassette recorder for those notes rather than try and write them down in the car.
Right.
I used to have a little micro cassette recorder.
Oh, I
and
have
now,
one of
then
those
I went
it's
to
in
a,
my purse. I mean, the little
and then I went to
I
the digital
one.
Recorder, but now we've got them on our phones and everything else, so you could dictate it.
Right.
Rather than try and write because I could never read my writing anyway. But, yeah, it is. It's amazing how you see something along the road. Oh, wait a minute. I can use that.
Exactly. So I think, you know, just taking the time to be quiet and to focus, I think, is what we're talking about here. And I think it's very important for people to say, you know, I don't need to be distracted all the time. Yes, I need to learn. I need to listen. But I need to listen to myself as well.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I have the best conversations with myself, and some days I lose the argument. But
yeah, well, I think we're both born to be lawyers. Thank God.
My daughter used to holler at me and told me I was scaring her because I was having the worst conversation with myself on both sides.
I do that all the time. And sometimes a third party can jump in and go, well, let's mediate this. It's interesting in your own head sometimes. A little scary, but it's interesting. Listen, I wanted to get back to your business plan because I know in your first book you broke down the pieces of the business plan. But you also say that you can save entrepreneurs valuable time and, you know, help them avoid some pitfalls. So do you mind if we kind of veer off and go in that direction?
Oh, no, that'd be great.
Okay,
what I do there is, you know, there's two ways to learn. You can learn from your own experience, or you can learn from the experience of others. And unfortunately, I wish I'd have had my book 25 years ago, but I had to learn for myself on a lot of this stuff because when I first started out in the first several years, I didn't have someone to really show me the ropes when it comes to the business side. And so I've taken that and just been able to share that 25 years of wisdom that I've learned running a small business. And so I've been able to share those things that people can use. When I had to hire employees, I had no clue. I didn't realize you had unemployment tax. You had all these other things that went along with an employee other than just a wage. Thank goodness for an accountant. And so that was one of the things I've always recommended. If you don't have a good accountant and a lawyer, when you start a business, find one.
Yeah.
It'll save you a lot of time and money in the long run because having to correct what you messed up is going to cost you more than doing it right the first time. But and so I've been able to share my experiences so that people can learn from it. You know, I've already suffered the setbacks of that because of this. Well, let me save you time of here's a process for doing this. Here's a process for doing that and avoiding some of these surprises that you have to, especially if you get into a brick and mortar situation, when you start adding up all the different things. When I had a regional manager that he decided that our insurance agencies, we were basically a franchise of the corporate, that we need to be running these like a true business that we are. And so we always laugh because he had a meeting and he pulled out these sample budget sheets out of his purse, is what we called it. But we tease him about his European man bag. But he showed us, you know, these are the things that you guys got to be responsible for. And I'm looking at this, and I was in a corporate office for a while, so I didn't have a lot of those. But when I made that transition to my own, and I'm looking at these and says, I have to pay what? I won't have any money left. And so realizing that going into it, you can plan a little bit better on the front end versus learning from going broke on the back end. And we see a lot of people do that because they didn't do enough homework and didn't ask for help. And that was the other piece, is people need to be, you know, okay with asking for help. You don't have to know everything. You just need to know who knows what that you can contact. And so I've been trying to share those little tidbits of lessons learned over 25 years so that people don't have to spend 25 years learning what I can help them do now.
Exactly. I see this a lot in one of my industries, the virtual assistance industry, where so many, I'm going to call them new VAs, you know, they've been in business maybe a year, maybe even two, they are not profitable, and they're puzzled. Why aren't they profitable? You know, they may be commanding fees of $35 to $45 to $55 an hour. In my case, it's considerably higher, but they're not profitable. And, you know, they'll ask me, well, what am I doing wrong? And I'll say, well, how are you budgeting? I mean, are you setting aside money for taxes? Are you, have you figured out how you're paying your team, what you're paying your team? Are you paying yourself? And they don't know. They just take the money, they spend the money, and then they wonder what in the heck went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a business plan. It's not a business model.
No, was it hope and
yeah,
luck
hope is not a business model. Right. What do you tell people that, you know, the virtual world is coming along at a rapid clip, so, you know, they need help. They need to figure out how to build a business model, budgeting, taxes. Your book would help them, yes?
Yes, because within it, it talks about, I've got a chapter on building your budget. You know, how do you build it? What do we have to consider when we're building this? And people don't realize the budget is tied to your goals. If you're looking at your income, all right, we need to write X amount of sales in order to bring the income in to pay our bills. And if they don't know what those numbers are, and I say, and people think, I'll come up with it, whatever the case may be, you're not pay this. And they get into a lot of trouble on many levels. But I've actually, there's some templates in there that they can use to give them an idea. You know, is Dan Kennedy says, swipe and deploy. You know, you take those and fit it to your industry, whatever you may be. But one of the questions I always like to ask business owners is, how much does it cost you to put your key in the lock every day? And then I get that deer
even
in the headlight.
Even if you're at home.
Look.
I mean, even if you're not leaving your house, you still have business costs. You still have the cost of a team if you have a team. You have the cost of all of your equipment. I mean, people don't consider this, I think, and I don't think, and I know it, by watching some of the comments in some of the VA groups in particular. They think they have a computer, they have a few skills, they're in business, and I just shudder for them. I do.
Well, and people, when, especially if you've come from that corporate world and you're moving into the entrepreneurial realm, you know, things that we took, and I was one of them, I took for granted in the corporate world, now we have to fund out of our own pocket. You know, and so people, that's hard for people to comprehend. You mean I have to pay all of Social Security, not just half of it? Well, yeah, you know, you are the owner of the business. You know, so you take 7.65 out of your right pocket, and you take 7.65 out of your left pocket. And they have a hard time grasping. And I said, you know, that's the way you're going to fund this. If you're not putting that money aside at the end of the year, when you get this tax bill from Uncle Sam, you're going to be crying and you're going to be running up all kinds of debt trying to cover that. And people I've seen just don't want to take the time to start with, like you say, you know, you got lights that have to be on to run your equipment. You've got marketing and all these other things that you got to have, and people don't think about it. And when they get tight, they cut the marketing, which it should be the last place they cut the budget, because you need marketing
exactly.
to bring in new customers.
Yeah, and it's always the first thing to go. I mean, even people, and I see this a lot, you know, they'll say, oh, well, I'm full. I don't need any more clients. Let me tell you something. You do. You need to have a waiting list. You need to always be front and center, or at least top of people's minds. So if you do lose a client for whatever reason, or you just can expand your business, or, you know, now you're big enough to expand, you don't want to have to start marketing all over again. There are too many, there are 500 people in front of you already. So, you know, that's the worst thing you can do.
Exactly. And it's,
and you're right,
and
I see
once
it all
we
the
get,
time.
Yeah, and then the other piece is customer retention. Everybody spends all their effort on bringing them in the front door. But are they going out the back door faster than you bring them in the front? And I see a lot of people don't think about that. And a good customer retention plan doesn't take much to keep them. It's just staying in contact with them. And, you know, you can get all these resources for little to no cost, but you have the time investment that people think, oh, I don't have the time for that. I brought a part-time girl into my insurance office just to do marketing. I says, here's the marketing calendar. So she had piece of my market or my business plan. You know, here's what we need to do every week. Here's the marketing calendar that we set up. And this, I need you to implement this. And this is your job, and you tell me what you're doing every week. And if you need something, you come see me. And I didn't have to worry about it because she was so good that it was all done. And so I was able to share that piece of that plan that affected her job duties. And it made it so much easier on me, because that's one of the things I have to oversee and do on a daily basis. But some things we can't as the business owner.
Right. And you just said something so important there, David. A lot of people will say, oh, you know, I don't want to share everything. To me, it's really important to have your team or your employees or your intern or whoever it is to be able to read into your vision. You've got to read them in. They can't adequately understand and help you if they don't really know where you're going. So sometimes you have to take the time to just sit down and say, okay, I'm not just giving you tasks. I'm not just saying do this, and by the way, you did this one wrong. I need to read you in on why you're doing this and why it's important for my business that you do it properly. And that's a big fail that I see a lot. Is that something that you've seen?
More times than not. And people think that they write this beautiful business plan. They spend all this time and effort. They got this beautiful plan, and they put it on the shelf. And it never sees
Why?
The light of day again.
Why do they do that?
Well, they think they don't need it because, well, I know everything in my head. It needs to be written down. And, you know, even if you're a solo entrepreneur, you still need to use that, because that's your roadmap on how you're going from startup to success.
And that's what I didn't have when I started out. I mean, it was in my head. I knew where I was going. I'm a techie. You know that. And I was just clocking along. I got really big, really fast, and I was able to maintain that for years. And then I got exhausted. So, you know, that's when I went back and said, okay, and the word roadmap is brilliant. I mean, I really needed that roadmap. And I also am moving away from what I used to do to some degree, and I'm going more into education and products and services. And I needed a new roadmap. I mean, I could see it in my head, but if I didn't have it written down, I kept changing and I kept losing focus, and that wasn't working.
Well, and that's what so many people do. You know, like you say, they don't want to share it. If you've got, if you have staff and you've got key staff, my personal belief, and this is what I tell my clients, is you need to share everything with them. Give them input in building that document. You know, how are we going to do this? My office manager, she had the full-blown plan. And she knew that we had to have X number of sales every week. And she held me to task because I've shared that with her. And on Wednesday, and she says, well, we're on target, behind schedule. You know, we've said we need this many appointments a week. We need to kick that up a little bit to reach our goal. But had I not shared that with her, I'd have been thinking, oh, things are good, and I'm behind schedule.
Now, when did you do this, David? Did you do this early in your career? I mean, when did it come to you that you needed to do this?
When I moved into my own office about the last 10 years of my career in the insurance, I had to start hiring people because I had the office, and I'm required to have full-time 40-hour week coverage. But I made sure at that point when we wrote it, we sat down and wrote the marketing together. You know, what can we do? How can we do it in return our investment? And so between the two of us, we're using that mastermind principle, and we're bouncing ideas off. I had a big whiteboard in my office, and we're marking up things. Well, we can do this and this, and until we both agreed on it because we're all on the same page, chapter and verse at that point. And if they're just going to answer the phones and whatever the case may be, you're paying them for some, you know, more than what they actually are doing for you. And you're not getting your money's worth out of your staff. And that was a key
point. And
they're
not engaged, are they? I mean, they're not engaged because they're just there to perform a service or a task, and they go home at the end of the day and they don't care.
Yeah, there's no ownership in anything.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So I know you've talked to a lot of people, and I know, you know, when you were doing your book and you're talking with a lot of people now doing a lot of research, is there any one or two top reasons that people give you why they won't share with their staff or their team? I mean, are they afraid? Is it that old corporate mindset of, oh, I have to keep it close to the vest or it will get stolen from me? What's going on out there? Do you know?
Well, some of the ones, if they've got staff and they share the financials with the staff, and if they're making this money, they're afraid that staff's going to want more money. You know, they don't want to pay them more. You know, and that's one of the key reasons I see that. And the other one is that corporate mentality. People say, well, why should I share it? Well, if you're paying them a good wage to start with, you don't have to worry about them wanting more money. Unless you tie bonuses and stuff to it, which is, hey, if we hit this, you get more, make more money. I'm all for that because they've got skin in the game. But people just, they like to keep the numbers personal. They don't want people to know how much they're making, or in some cases, how much they're not making.
Oh, gotcha.
And it's that portrayal that, you know, we're out there posing this real successful front in reality. We're losing our shirt but they don't want people to know that. They're keeping those cards close to the vest. And I see that, a lot of it, too, between that, like I say, and the staff thinking they're going to want more money. Those are the two big areas that I've seen.
So when you're coaching and mentoring people about this, are there any particular things that come up over and over again?
Most of them are just, I should say, they're unique to some of the businesses, but there's not a real key theme other than the one thing that most of them don't have a clue is who's their ideal customer. When I ask that question, no, they know that. Well, someone said, well, everybody's my customer. And then I kind of, no. Then you have no ideal customer if everybody's your customer. And so spending some time identifying that and where to find them. And some people have this misconception that social media is the end all be all when it comes to marketing and
it's
trying to get them to know.
But it's not.
Well, it's only
thing.
A piece. Yeah.
Right. Right.
But, you know, I understand when you're bootstrapping a startup that I don't have a lot of money to invest in media or print media or things, but you can do small mailings once you identify that niche market where your preferred people are at. And one of the things that we did over the years is we knew what type of homes that we wanted and what kind of income levels that we wanted to work with. And so I was able to identify through a list broker and other sources that I've used, get a list of these people in the preferred areas if these set out all my different criteria, and that became our marketing list, and we just send out a few a week until we keep an eye on the return on investment, making sure that we're covering what we're sending out. And then one campaign that we did, we sent out postcards to everybody. Hey, we're new in the neighborhood. You know, this is where our office is. We'd love to have you stop by. So we did that, and then we threw a billboard up. And billboards aren't cheap. Luckily, through the corporate world that I was dealing with, we had a 50% share at that time. So it still cost me a lot of money, but not as much as it would have otherwise. So for a month, my ugly mug was up on his billboard. At the same time, all these postcards were going out. And so when people come, so we knew what we invested on the front end, and then we started tracking commissions coming in. And the first client, when we covered their household, paid for the billboard and the postage. So everything else
but you
of
have
that
to
was
track
profit.
It. You're saying something that's very important. You can't just kind of toss it up there and go, oh, it's working, or, oh, you know, nothing really happened with that. You must track it. And I think that's where a lot of people just fall off. I mean, they're just, you know, they're not looking at their ROI. They're not looking at the cost of doing business. You know, they're just kind of hoping that it's working. Or, you know, the phone didn't ring that first day, so I'm not going to do that again. I see that a lot.
Well, and then when they do make a change, they make wholesale changes instead of one piece at a time to test it. And so there's a lot of information and people think, oh, we just got to redo this whole thing. It's not working. And they can't do that. You've got, if you changed everything, what was wrong with the first piece? And it might just be as simple as changing a color or a location of some words on a postcard to get a better attention when people look at it. So there's a lot of key pieces in the marketing that people don't realize. And they just think because they open a business that everybody's going to be their customer and don't break it down. I was guilty of that at one time when I went into the insurance. You know, I was new and had no clue. I come out of a factory. And I had to learn that, no, everybody is not your potential customer. You have to break it down to what type of income brackets and all this. And so I learned early on to identify the core groups that I'm going after and making sure that I'm doing the things where they're at. If you're looking for 65-plus people, age people, they're not on Twitter and so in Facebook and LinkedIn. You know, so we have to look at different, and people tend to forget that piece of it. Where are your customers located, and how can you reach them?
So how long did it take you to learn all this? I mean, when you started out, we didn't have social media and YouTube to teach us how to do things. Look, every time I buy something from Amazon and it comes with this little bitty manual that I can't read, I go to Amazon and I find the video. Somebody figured it out and they put it up there. How did we function before all of this? I mean, it wasn't that long ago. We didn't have it, but now we do. But so many of the I guess what I'm saying here, David, is that so many of the lessons that you've learned, it sounds like you had to teach yourself.
I did. And those were some of the things. And how you converted the old school. We always laugh, some of the folks that had been through the insurance business like I was in those years. Yeah, when I started, I got this great big book of prospects to go out and contact. It was the yellow pages or the phone book. And it says starting at D because the last guy left off at the C's. But, you know, we didn't have caller ID and no call lists to deal with. And so we always laugh about that. You know, like I say, some of the, as I call them, the old timers in the business. But it is. It's a transition. And that's how I'm helping people that, all right, haven't had time to identify those sources. And one client of mine started a new business, and she came to me for help, and I'm saying, all right, we need to let people know you're out there, so we need to blanket it out real big, real quick. So we put together, and I went back to my list broker with what her ideal client is. After her and I sat down, identified what she's looking for, income, what kind of area. And so basically, we just did like a 5-mile radius around her house, around her office, to let people know she's in business. It was a veterinarian clinic. And I got this list come back, and I had, about 5,000 names within a 5-mile radius of people that had cats.
Oh.
In, you know, and I'm blown away on this. And it, it, but I needed, she needed to know where to get this information.
Right.
Well, because of the experiences that I've learned, I went right to the company that I used all for the last 10 years in insurance, called them up and says, all right, this is what I need. Can you put together this list? And she says, yeah. And that's what I, all right, give me the cost. And believe it or not, that list that would cost of those 5,000 households was less than $200.
Oh, my goodness.
And
you know, there's some small
then,
things that, go ahead, I'm sorry, and then
yeah,
I'll tell you my little anecdote.
Yeah, we've, I expanded that out to 20 miles because, you know, we travel ways to go to doctors and things like that, and people that love their animals will do the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
And we had 25,000 names of households when we went out 20 miles. And they will send you a printout of name, address, phone number that's scrubbed against the do not call list. Or they'll, if they have emails, they will do the email for you. They will actually send it all out, or you could do it yourself. But it's finding, it's knowing where to find these resources. I get several calls from people that have coached me. Hey, I need a list. What can you do for me? And so people are getting to know me as the list guy, which is a good thing because I've used that to help myself and clients, and we have to have a customer base.
Right. Well, you're now a resource. And, you know, David, there's other small things that you can do that won't cost any money, but very little money, but really leave an impact. And there's a young realtor here, and I've never heard of him. I'm not prepared to sell my house, but if I ever do, I will contact this man if he's in business. But last 4th of July, you know, I went out and I was running some errands. I had a big group of people coming, and I think I needed something from the grocery store. And I drove back into my little neighborhood. We're only 3 streets deep, 3 streets wide. It's a very quiet neighborhood. And each mailbox, they're all down at the road, each mailbox had a little small American flag standing next to it, just planted in the ground next to the mailbox. And it looked lovely. I mean, you're driving down the street and you see all these little flags just rippling. So I get home and I go down to my mailbox and I pick it up and it's got his card attached to it. And I thought, how interesting. Probably the little flags cost him $1 a piece at Dollar General, Dollar Tree, his business cards. You know, he's those already in his business budget. And I'm telling you, he made a fan out of me. I thought that was a very interesting and sweet thing to do on the 4th of July. So I posted on his Facebook page. He didn't see it right away, but I said, you know, thank you, and I hope you come back again next year. And he said, you know, I wasn't planning, but I will. So this 4th of July, I'm looking forward to seeing that little flag out there. And I have to tell you, once the 4th was over, I picked it up, and that same flag is still here at my house. It's in a planter on my porch. So he left a lasting impact on me with almost no cost involved.
It's the little things that we can do. In the same way, you know, people don't want to network.
Right.
I spend, I'd say, at least 50 to 60% of my time building those networks of people that I can use as resources and go to different events, not only to learn, but who's there that can benefit me? And how do I meet that person? And a lot, I see a lot of people, well, I don't need to go that. I know that. I have met some incredible people by going to these some of these seminars. Yeah, I may know it, but my goal is to always learn at least one thing, no matter what it is, and sometimes reinforcing what I've learned over the years, and I know, is just as important to me as learning a new item, because I'm doing something right. But in the meantime, I've sat down, and I've made a great contact to the person sitting next to me, and have become longstanding friends with most of them. And so people can use that, but they don't want to go, and that's another investment. You know, and some of these seminars are $25, $30. Or, you know, they're relatively inexpensive, and you look at the long-term payback. Is this going to be worth my while to go to? And I just seen one come across that's a free program. This is where the business people and the ones that are starting businesses are going to be. I'm going to be there.
Right.
And so it's identifying those locations where you're going to run into people.
And you can do it online, too. It, you know, it doesn't have to be a physical location.
Oh, absolutely. LinkedIn especially is because you can ask for an introduction to someone you know that knows that person. And it's been a great, that's how I did my business marketing for years. Once I got familiar with LinkedIn, somebody said, well, why are you cold calling businesses? This is the way you do it, and show me how to do that. I never cold called a business again because I could ask for those introductions, and now they're a warm lead going into it. Made my job so much easier.
Exactly, and that's what LinkedIn is all about. Okay, we have 10 seconds, and then we don't have 10 seconds. We just stopped streaming. So for the chat room, they just lost us, but we're still recording. So David, as the doctor of business planning, what tip or suggestion would you give that can be put to immediate use?
Now, first of all, I would locate a mentor if you don't have one. And get involved in some of your local organizations that can build your resource list. But the biggest thing is make sure you're tracking your goals and budgets to see how you're comparing. There's so many people that don't do that, but make sure you're doing that and share that with somebody to hold you accountable. I'm a firm believer in accountability. I need help. That's why I'm a believer in it, because without somebody holding my feet to the fire, sometimes I get a little lackadaisical. So by having somebody saying, do this, whether it be a spouse, significant other, friend, mentor, whatever, find somebody that will hold your feet to the fire.
Yeah, I've done that for years, and I'm telling you, without that, I'd be wandering around chasing squirrels with the dog. Well, listen,
without
David,
a doubt.
Yeah, truly, I would. where can people find you on the web?
My webpage is dbrowncompany.com, and the company is spelled out. But one of the things I will do is if people go there, a couple things. There's a spot to download this business planning guide that I spoke about earlier. That it's fill in the blank. You can download it, fill it in, and there's other resources that you'll have access to, templates and examples of things that you can implement today in your business. And all I ask is just give me your name and email, and you can do that. And the other thing that I'll do for your listeners, Denise, is if they send me an email to david@dbrowncompany.com or go to the contact us on the website and put your name in the contact, I will give them a 30-minute free conference call to discuss any issues they have with their business plan.
Oh, that is wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. I'm sure my audience will love that. Is there a cutoff date on that? Is this kind of an open-ended offer? Or
I think I'll kind of leave it at an open end at this point. Because people may listen to the broadcast at different times.
They do. They download it a lot.
Right. And so we'll just keep it open, and we may come to a point down the road if I get overwhelmed that we may have to cut it back. But at that point, we'll have to address it. But at this point, if somebody has questions about business planning, send me an email, put Denise Griffiths in the comment section, and then what I'll do is I will send you some open dates, and we can coordinate that.
That is amazing. Thank you, David. Well, listen, thank you so much for being with me here today. It has been an honor and a pleasure chatting with you, and I know the audience enjoyed the takeaways as much as I did, and I hope you get a ton of people asking for that consultation. I think that's an amazing offer. So listen, you have a great Memorial Day weekend, a safe weekend, and I will see everybody next week.
Thanks, Denise, for having me on your program.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.